Welcome to Post-Traumatic Thriving, where we explore life's toughest issues, along with the art, science, and stories of resilience. Please be advised that our guests share their raw stories of addiction, abuse, crime, and tragedy, along with tips to survive and thrive. And now, here are our hosts, Dr. Randall Bell and Tanya Brown.
Hello. Welcome to Post-Traumatic Thriving. I am Dr. Randall Bell. I'm joined by Tanya Brown, our co-host. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Randy.
Hi. And we have a fantastic guest, Reza Rezvi.
Yay.
Did I say that right,
Reza? You said it right. Spot on. Yeah. You know, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, we're so glad you're here. We just want to jump right into you. I read your bio, and Tanya's been talking about you for a while, and obviously, you're a cool guy, cool young guy from cool England with a cool accent.
Yep.
And your story is crazy because today you're successful. We'll get into that in episode three.
Yeah. But yeah, but, debatable. But yeah, I appreciate that.
It's all true. I could tell already. So let's start with tell us about where you were born, your childhood. Let's just start with the start of your timeline, Reza.
Cool. All right. So I was born in West London. It's a small town called Hounslow. It's about 15 minutes away from Heathrow. So it's not in Notting Hill or central London or any of the nice parts. It's more in a working class environment. My family, so I'm Muslim, and my family, I would say, is pretty, I would say, sharply observant Muslim family. My sister is 10 years younger than me. And we basically when I was born, my dad had a pretty decent job at the time. So we were living a fairly good life up until around 10 years old, when my dad basically got laid off. And my earliest memory is just my dad not working and me not really knowing why. And then actually, I didn't even know the reason why up until I was writing my book and I had to call up my mom. This was going back a month or two ago. I said, "Hey, mom, why did dad get laid off in the end?" And essentially, his boss was claiming for all of my dad's hard work. And ultimately, our life completely got derailed at that point, where we were going on trips to France and living a pretty good life, even though we were living in a sort of a working class environment. But our life got sort of turned upside down. And I grew up pretty much in a public school environment. The area itself, as I mentioned, was not the best. There were quite a few gangs, all types of gangs. So on the corner, there was like Jamaican gang that would hang out. There would be South Asian gangs, and there would be Somalian gangs. There would just be pockets of different gangs around the neighborhood. And stabbings in particular are very common in England. And actually, when I was born, no joke, if my house is here and the park is right here, somebody literally got stabbed to death, like right opposite where I lived, just to kind of set the context for where I grew up. And you know, I was kind of doing my thing, and just, I've always been a little bit of a hustler in different ways, I would say, legal hustler.
I was gonna say
to clarify. I used to, one of the big crazes was back when the Nokia 3310s and all of that came out. I would basically sell mobile phones in school. That would be my thing. And then from there, my mom would pack burgers for me, and then I would sell them in school for a pound each. Yeah. And then I got my best friend Nathan involved, and we started to create a little bit of a business where my mom would pack burgers and we would sell. So I've always had sort of an early entrepreneurial mindset. In all honesty, I don't know where I got it from, right? Because my dad certainly wasn't like that. And to kind of talk to you guys a little bit about what went on at home, I was, as I mentioned, my sister was born 10 years after me, so I was the first born. I think my parents were kind of like figuring it out. They were quite young. I think that they were in their mid-20s or something when I was first born. And I just don't think that they had a pretty good grasp on things. My mom is a very sweet woman, very caring, my dad, he's a good guy, but he's a hard ass, right? Especially when I was born. And academically, and I don't mean this to sound in a sort of like I'm bashing myself, because it's a fact. I'm not academically smart. It's just not my strong suit. In school, I didn't do very well. I think I got, when I finished my GCSEs, which is, I guess it's high school in America, except we do schooling and then we do college and then we do university. So in school, I finished with one C, one D, one E, one F, and one G. I was trying to get each letter of the alphabet. That was my goal.
That's a great way to learn your alphabet.
That's right. I didn't even know G's were possible, quite honestly.
Well, that's England. In the US of A, you get the lowest is an F.
F.
Yeah.
It goes A, B, C, D, F. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Get a G.
I think they also have a U, which is ungraded. Thankfully, I didn't get a U.
Okay.
Oh, that's but, okay.
Yeah, but I wasn't doing very well. And my dad would really, he was a chartered financial accountant. Right. My granddad, his father was pretty successful and my grandmother as well. Right. They were immigrants, traditional immigrant family, came to England with £5 in their pocket. Right. And ended up doing very well for themselves. You know, my cousins around me are lawyers, actuaries. They all come from pretty corporate environments. I was kind of like the black sheep because I just wouldn't really get stuff like that. And my dad would really lose his temper. Like really lose his temper when I wouldn't understand like basic mathematical concepts. And I think that created a little bit of a salty taste in my mouth because I saw all of my other friends, and most of my friends, to put it in perspective, are not Muslim. Most of my friends are actually from the Caribbean for the most part, because the school that I went to was mostly, I think there were other races, but it was mostly like Caribbean and African descent. And I would look at them and I'd be like, oh man, they have such a cool life and their parents are so cool and fun. And then I come home and like my dad would like shout at me every day because I just wouldn't be able to complete my homework and I just wasn't getting good grades. So by the time I hit 17, in my words, I became a bit of a degenerate where I would just stay out late hanging out with my friends. And now that I'm older, I feel quite bad about it because my mom would often say to me, hey, she wouldn't say don't go out. She would say, if you're going out, just send me a text. By the way, I have a bird and she's coming up. Is that okay?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Right.
What's your bird's name?
Pikachu.
Good.
She's the chief squeak officer of our agency. So she decided to make a guest appearance.
That's all fine.
She's a rescue. So when I was about 16, 17, I'd stay out late at night. Yeah, I wouldn't get into alcohol and drugs just because I didn't want to disappoint my parents, right? Uh-huh. That was the main thing for me, to that extent at least. I could be an academic disappointment, that was okay, but I didn't want to go off the rails that much because, as you guys may know, you know, coming from a Muslim household, those things are not they're not prohibited, right?
Yeah.
Or they are prohibited, sorry. But, you know, I would hang out, come out late at night. Eventually, I would move out at a pretty early age, and then I moved in with my uncle, which was my dad's brother, because my dad's brother was the cool uncle, right? He would just let me do whatever I wanted. I could come home whenever I want. I didn't have to tell him anything. And things were going very well. And then my uncle also became, you know, he's also a very particular individual. He's a lawyer. So I think that should kind of give you a sense of his personality. And he then started to get quite annoyed with like different things and like expectations. And perhaps it was me also, just like my character, that couldn't take it. And then I decided to move out when I got accepted into university, which is when I stayed in dorms. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the university story.
Well, before we jump into the university, let's unpack some of this stuff, because you're hitting a lot of really interesting things. So a lot of people think of London, you know, honestly, from the United States, think of Mary Buckingham Poppins. Or, and right? Yeah, it's yeah. And yeah. You're describing something that sounds more like South Central LA.
Oh, it's definitely not as bad, but it has its bits.
Well, let me tell you, yeah. I mean, we don't live that far from LA, and South Central LA is not that bad. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. the hype. There's crime, but frankly, there's crime right here. There's crime everywhere. So
it's a stereotype.
So from when you were born to 10, life was pretty good, right?
Yeah, life was pretty good. Yeah.
Just a happy kid. Your dad's a CPA. Yeah, it sounds like your parents were good parents. They're both there.
And then
the first kind of layer of trauma, if you will, was, I'm sure it was traumatic for your dad and your mom, but to lose his job at age 10. So you're getting kind of woken up to the adult world at age 10, right? Yeah, and that's about the time your sister comes along too.
Yes. Yeah. So and a quick note on my sister, I think it's pretty important to mention, and I hope that she won't mind me saying this. My sister was born with a heart condition that required open heart surgery, right? From the moment she was born. It was very serious. The doctors in fact said that she was not going to survive, and then they said if she was going to survive there would be severe disabilities, either she would be born without an arm or something of that. So thankfully she's healthy now, right? She's far more intelligent than I am, I would say. She's 24, 25, 26, something like that. So that also added additional trauma. But again, I was young. I didn't really know what was going on, right? It's only now that I'm older and that I've started to write the book and I've had to really reflect a little bit that I've realized that, and I will get into this as the story continues, that my upbringing was not my parents' fault. They were going through a lot of difficult things that I was not privy to. Because I was young and foolish and I just didn't have a good worldly sense. So on top of him being unemployed, my dad, or being fired, I think, he then was going through this trauma with my sister. So, there's now two kids that they have to provide for. So that on top of everything else just added a whirlwind for both of my parents. And I still have the memory. She was all hooked up to all types of things like her mouth, and she's really tiny as well. So sorry to cut you off, but I thought that might be worth mentioning as well on top of the additional trauma.
How long was your dad out of work? Because that, I mean, my God, that
he's not worked since.
Oh wow.
Yeah. He started to get into the investment game and he lost a lot of money in 2006, 2005, as I was finishing up high school. And he, on top of that, has, and we'll get into this as well as we advance the conversation, he has his own various sets of mental health challenges and things of that nature. My earliest memory of my dad working the last time was at 10 years old. And my mother doesn't work and has not worked. She takes care of my family, and she took care of my grandparents while they were alive, and she was essentially their caregiver. So so we don't have a stream of income as it were.
Right. So so your dad's laid off or fired when you're 10, your sister comes along with having a new baby. That's that's stressful. Mm-hmm. And then she's born with a congenital heart defect. Frankly, I don't want to get into this, but I was born with a congenital heart defect and I had open heart surgery. So I can really relate because I've been there. So I get that. So it's kind of piling on. Plus in the neighborhood, there's knife fights and this kind of BS going on. For a little guy who's 10, by the way, your Muslim family, my best man's a Muslim, and I know there's kind of gradients of adherence, but was your family going to the mosque regularly and the prayers? And
very religious. My grandma is the epitome of an old Muslim lady, you know, very religious.
Yeah,
I would say my mother is. My dad was born in England. And I think I should probably add this. So my mother actually was born in Pakistan. My dad was born in England, but his parents are half Indian and half Pakistani. So my dad was westernized, right? But my mother, on the other hand, was not, at least back then. So that too added some challenges for me because I'm a Western kid.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we're not in Pakistan, we're in England.
So
I was dealing with some of those things as well. So that also added an interesting dynamic within the house too.
Yeah. Okay.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wow.
And what about, you haven't mentioned who are your friends in the neighborhood? What kind of, tell us more. Oh, you did mention a little, but tell us more about who you're hanging out with.
Yeah. So I always hung out with, I had people that were doing stuff, right, in the neighborhood, but the people that I was close with were good people. And actually, I'm still friends with them since high school. My best friends, Nathan and Akil, I've known them since I was 13 years old. And we've been friends for a very long time. And they too are, I would say, very successful. One works at Sony, right? Nathan and Akhil does. And my best friend, Nathan, he's a professional TV camera. But we all grew up in the same environment. And it's funny, right? Because, and again, we'll get into this as well, but one of our friends died at a very early age because he had stomach cancer.
Mm.
And... sorry, it makes me feel quite sad when I talk about him.
It's okay.
How old was your friend when he passed away?
He was 22 years old.
Okay.
And he died within about 6 months. Because the stomach cancer took over his body. But in school, our crew was me, Nathan, whom I mentioned, the cameraman, Akhil, who now works at Sony. And then we had a couple of other friends as well. But as we grew older, the relationship distanced off. And then Kieran, my friend who died of stomach cancer, he too was part of our circle. And we would do everything together and just have fun, right? None of us got into dodgy stuff, even though it was happening around us.
Yeah.
Right? It just wasn't part of our character. We could have easily gone into it if we wanted to, right? Nathan and also comes from a very good household, and as does Akhil, right? We all, and I think that perhaps that is part of it as well, right? It's because in the home, I'm sure that Nathan and Akhil had their own sets of challenges, but we came from good homes, right? Where we had people around us. And I think they too probably didn't want to disappoint their parents by getting into some of this stuff. Unfortunately for Kieran, my friend who passed away, his parents both died also at an early age. Mm. You know, we would do everything together. And I would say we were all pretty level in our academic ability, right? In that, we would often joke with each other, oh yeah, I'm better than you at maths, oh yeah, but you're crap at English. And we would always like, it would be an environment where, you know how you watch, when you watch like an American high school sitcom and everybody kind of makes fun of each other? It was that type of an environment where it was just very fun. In the book, when I talk about it, I've named the chapter, gangs, happiness, and there's one more. Hustling, gangs, and happiness. And when I showed it to a few friends, they're like, what a trio that is. You know, so my friends are very good people, and we've always been there for one another. Akhil, I had lost touch with for some years. And, you know, we'll get into this as well. It's really difficult not being in England with my friends, right? And my brothers. I call them my friends, but they're like my brothers. Nathan is the only person in my life, even my parents have not seen me at rock bottom. He was the only person that I confided in, because I too am not the type of person. I don't like pity from others. Mm-hmm. I don't like to talk about my problems, but Nathan was somebody whom I could always turn to. And I'll give you just a quick little, I mentioned this at his wedding recently. I gave the best man speech to just emphasize his character. So when we were applying for university, because of my grades, I wasn't able to get into a good university. I had to go through what's known as clearing. Clearing is basically schools that have space. That's it, right? There's no prestige attached to it. Nathan was the first. I remember at the time I had even longer hair and I used to get it braided, right? And I remember this so clearly. We were getting our hair braided, right? Nathan got an acceptance. He was the first to get accepted into university. And he told me, he's like, man, he's like, I got accepted. I was like, no way. I was like, that's fantastic, man. I'm so happy for you. He didn't celebrate. The first thing that he said was, I'm going to make sure that you and Jess is his high school sweetheart, now his wife. I'm going to make sure that you guys get in. And he literally sat with me applying for all of these different schools. And ultimately, I got into a school. We won't talk about how badly the school was ranked, but I got in nonetheless. But I just to kind of emphasize the character of the people that I hung around with, and they motivate me to do better, you know, yeah. What I mean, in life.
You know, I'd like to kind of delve into this other kind of, you could call it a trauma too, which quite honestly, and I'm not, this is not false modesty. I struggled academically as a kid too, because I am still a very slow thinker. I like to methodically think things over. And when the teacher's up there whiz banging all the equations or whatever, it's hard. And I don't keep up well with that. And so, I have a few college degrees, but but it came with a lot of work.
Yep.
So how did you kind of, as a kid, going back to, you know, you don't call it high school there, middle school,
secondary school.
I mean, and you want to be successful. You come from a family of bright people. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of, what did that landscape look like with struggling academically?
Yeah. Yeah. At that age, I didn't really have goals and aspirations, right? I was just kind of mulling along, having fun in my own little world. Didn't really think about the future. What is the future? Right. You know, at 15, 14 years old, you know, I just want to have fun, right? I don't want to grow up, you know? And my parents did their best effort to help me improve. They put me in tutoring. I think you guys have Kumon here, do you? Maths. So there was Kumon. My friends used to make fun of me because my parents put me into Kumon because of how bad at maths I was. Mm-hmm. I had to go there every Friday after school when I absolutely hated it. And you know, my cousin, what were you going to say, Tanya?
I was, you know what, your story with math, it just brings me back to my dad. I mean, all of us kids, because my dad was like, almost like MIT, just brilliant, brilliant in math.
Yeah, yeah.
He couldn't understand why none of us could ever get it. So here I'm listening to your stories.
Yeah,
and I'm like, my dad was the same way. You know, it's like I'd come to the table and I'd say, Daddy, I need help with this equation. And he's like, well, go in your room and try. And I go, that's what I've been doing for 8 hours.
Yeah. And my dad would lose. He would have a very short fuse when I would ask for help.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have the patience. And that I understand now that I'm older is because of his dad. And my granddad, he is the best granddad. He was not a great father, based on what I know, to my dad and his siblings. Mm-hmm. He was abusive and they used to get beat.
Oh. Like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Bad. Yeah. So that certainly molded things, right? With and my dad, let me be clear, he's never hit me. The worst that my dad has ever done is pushed me really hard and then he apologized. So I've never been physically assaulted by my parents, you know. Going back to the academics, right? And then the other thing was in school, right? I grew up in a sports school, so that all the teachers favored the athletes. And this is the other thing, actually. So Nathan was an athlete. He played football, soccer. I'm very good at it, my other friends. So everybody favored the athletes, and anybody who was not an athlete would just be like, you know, we don't really care about you. So, you know, when I remember opening the envelope and when I saw the letters, the C, the D, the E, F, and the G, my first thought was, flipping heck, my dad is going to be absolutely pissed when he sees this. Mm. You know, and it sort of, you know, made me feel quite nervous. Not so much because I performed badly, but because of what was going to happen when I got home, you know. And I had to tell my dad, my tail between my legs, that, you know, I didn't do very well. And then ultimately, obviously, at that age, it's funny now, you think that those grades matter at that age, you know. So in my world, mm-hmm. when I got the C, the D, the E, F, and the G, I thought, oh my God, that's it. I'm done. I am done. I'm not going to be able to do anything with my life now. You know, this is going to set me off for the rest of my life. And you know, I tried to do tutoring. And I'll tell you a quick little story. To my younger cousin, and I talked about him a little bit because he also went through some stuff. But he was extremely, extremely intelligent, several years above his where he was meant to be. So he was like 3 or 4 years above. And he would be running laps around me, and he's 4 years younger than me, right? So we would go to this tutor, and one of the times we would have to get to our tutor's house, we would have to go through like the main high street. And I remember this one time we were going, he's a lot smaller than me, and a gang stopped us on the way there. And at that time, stealing mobile phones was what people did. So they stopped us, right? And as I mentioned, I used to sell mobile phones. So I had loads of them on me all the time. And they stopped us and they said, give us your phones now. There were like 10 of them surrounding just me and my cousin. And my cousin, obviously he was scared. In my mind, I was like, oh man, I got to run it. Otherwise they're going to take all my phones and I'm not going to get any money. So I ran as fast as I could. And one of the guys was like chasing after me. And I looked back behind my shoulder and I saw that my cousin didn't run. He stayed there.
Oh, wow.
With the 10 gangs, with the 10 members.
No. Yeah.
And I was like,
oh no,
man. I was like, I can't leave him. I just stopped running. And then I just got absolutely beat up. They made us pull our pants down, like embarrassed us, stole our phones, money, everything. But I was like, I'm not going to leave my cousin behind. Yeah. You know, who knows what they're going to do to him. So, you know, and then we went to tutor after getting robbed and mugged and just did our thing. But, you know, that also dampened the environment a little bit for me, because here's my younger cousin running rings around me to the point where my friends of my dad would frequently come up to him and say, you got to sort out Reza. Like, he's going to amount to nothing when he grows up, unless something changes. Mm. You know, and it's funny, right? Because my dad now in my adulthood, he always comes to me and he always says, man, he said, you proved them all wrong. He said, every single one of them thought you weren't going to become anything. And you've now surpassed everybody that you grew up with. Mm. And I just say, man, I was like, yeah, that's a pretty cool feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool feeling, you know. Cool. I thought I was doomed when I got those grades after secondary school. And it's you know, but I've had to fight a lot throughout my life. I've really had to fight to get to, and people often say to me, you're so lucky, man, you live in America. You live in Miami. Oh my God, you're so lucky. And I'm like, man, I was like, you have no idea. I was like, luck is not even remotely a part of how I got here.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, let's go back to our university experience. But you got a lot of success. We'll get there. Yeah. But let's go back to you kind of, anything else about kind of your childhood, or you want to just get back into your university life?
No, I think the brunt of kind of what I went through started at the university level. So we can transition. And sorry, I'm kind of like waffling back and forth with that.
That's all right.
The chronology.
All good. Yeah. It's all great. It's all good. But yeah, let's talk about your university experience, because you did get into a university.
Yes,
and,
I did.
And it sounds like you worked hard to do it with the help of Nathan, your friend.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got into university. I said we won't talk about the ranking, but I'll let you guys know. It was ranked 109th in the country. It was like third last on the ranking list. But I didn't care. I got into university. That's all that mattered to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I studied business management. And first year, I was just having fun. I was living in dorms, doing my thing, doing what college kids do in dorms, yeah. Right?
Do you mind telling us the name of the university?
University of Greenwich.
See, that sounds prestigious.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it looks prestigious as well. A fun fact about University of Greenwich, Pirates of the Caribbean actually was filmed inside University of Greenwich. Really? It's attached to a naval museum.
Well, yeah, Greenwich is a beautiful, beautiful town.
It's a very beautiful town.
Oh, it really is. Yeah. And then you went into the median. What is it? Where you're in the Western Hemisphere or the Eastern Hemisphere?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
Greenwich line.
Yeah.
In my house of my family all straddling the Western and Eastern Hemisphere.
That's neat.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's a very nice place. It's very clean, very different to where I was raised in Hounslow.
Okay. It sounds posh. You could have fooled me.
I know.
Yeah. But, you know, again, I met a couple of friends there whom I'm still friends with to this day as well. Their names are Leonie and Akos, and both who have supported me throughout my endeavor and constantly tell me how proud they are of me. But, you know, when I was in university doing business management, again, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, quite honestly. I was still just going through the motions, right? When I got to my second year of university, I started to get a little bit of clarity about what I wanted to do. And I wanted to get into advertising, right? And I remember the discussion with my dad and said to my dad, "Hey, Dad, I think I want to get into advertising. Can I tell you what he said, like without, like he swore?"
Yeah, go for it.
He said, "You fucking what?" He's Cockney, right? Uh-huh. So you know Jason Statham? He speaks like Jason Statham.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He goes, "You fucking what, mate?" He said, "What the fuck you want to do that shit for?" He said, "What are you gonna do with advertising?" So there's no money in that. Right? And I said, "No," I was like, "I want to do advertising." He's like, "No," he's like, "You ain't gonna do advertising, mate." He said, "Do like become a finance or accounting or something that actually will make you something, right?" Because that's what they knew. And at this moment in time, my dad and I had a pretty rough relationship because this was, as I described, when all the hostility was going on. So I was just like, "Oh man, I don't care what he thinks. I'm going to do it anyway." Right. So needless to say, he wasn't very pleased with my decision.
Okay.
Right. And then as I got to my third year of university, I decided that I wanted to move to America. And people ask me, "Why did you want to move to America?" And the reason is very underwhelming. The reason is because growing up, I would watch American sitcom shows and there would always be that one British guy in the show. And I would just wanted to be that guy. I wanted to be that British guy surrounded by Americans. That was my reason. So when people ask me, they're like, "Oh, that's not, I was expecting like something a little bit more." And I was like, "No, that was my reason." And and it's funny because I had my first taste of America in 2011 when Nathan and I came to Miami, and I thought Miami was the best place in the world. I was like, "Oh my God, like I want to be here. This is where I'm meant to be." I think I even remember saying to Nathan, "Man, Nathan, I'm going to move here one day, man." I was like, "I don't know how I'm going to do it. It's going to happen."
It's a little warmer than London.
Yeah.
A little warmer than London. Yeah. Yeah. And I would say
how are your grades in university? How are you
doing? They were not bad. Yeah.
So you're kind of you realize you got some game.
Yeah, I'm waking up. I'm realizing, all right, business may be my thing. Maths definitely ain't my thing. Uh-huh. But I think business, you know, and then as I get older, when I mentor young people, I often tell them, don't do business. Because like, what is business? you know, well, what are you going to do with business management? But I was doing well at the marketing electives. You know, I think I had like sociology and like other things that were not as academic as biology, physics, and those things. So I realized I had a little bit of a knack for non, I don't know how you would group those, but the
Well, we call it hard sciences and soft sciences.
Yeah.
So hard sciences are like physics and
chemistry,
math. You know, and soft sciences are like psychology, sociology, history.
Yes.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
For sure.
I was also really enjoying it to the point where I would actually go to my teachers professors after class, and then the teachers began to really like me because I would really put in an effort, because in my mind I thought, all right, this is real now. Like, you know, I kind of now gathered that GCSEs don't mean anything, my university grades mean a lot. And this is kind of where I realized I can't walk out of here with a third class degree, right? Because in the UK they do it as first, which is 4.0 GPA. And then you have 2.1, which is the next level, 2.2. And then I think third. I don't know if there's anything below that. I finished off with a 2.1, right? So just under a first, which I was pretty happy about. I was actually surprised. I thought I was going to end up with a 2.2. And if you end up with a 2.2, that's it. It's over, right? Like, it's, you know, you can't do a whole lot with that. So the grades were picking up. I was beginning to show a bit of an interest also in my education, particularly those electives that I had chosen. And then I decided that I wanted to move to America. And at this point also, it's worth mentioning that I'm living predominantly off student loans, right? Because my dad obviously is not working. And due to our situation at home, I was able to get the maximum amount of student loans for maintenance and housing and so on and so forth. So I looked into how I could move to America. I was serious about it. And I think the year is 2007, roughly, where I'm starting to look at this. And I have a good relationship with my uncle, despite the things that were going on in his house when I moved in with him. Nonetheless, we still had a good relationship. And he was more open-minded than my dad. He has his own business, and he's a lawyer. So I think he had a bit of entrepreneurial flair within him as well. So he supported it. And then I started to look for avenues. And I found a program called BUNAC. I don't know if it still exists, B-U-N-A-C. And they had a program that would allow you to get a J-1 visa and travel to the US. No guarantee of employment or sponsorship or anything like that. So I was like, all right, cool. Like, it's all good. I'll find something in my mind, right? It's all right. You know, I don't need guaranteed employment. I'll find something, right? And at that moment, I didn't even care if I was a street sweeper. I just wanted to live in America, quite honestly. So I applied for the program. You have to pay for the visa. I used my student loans to pay for the visa. I got accepted into the program. And now I'm like over the moon. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to America. This is fantastic. Where am I going to go? You know? where shall I pick? And actually, let me mention something. Before I applied to BUNAC, I was actually looking at how to get into American colleges. And then I realized how bad the tuition rates are in the US. And I was like, I could not afford 50 to 100K a year. Like, and coming from abroad, like, that's, you know, you have to pay for it yourself. And there's a premium also if you're coming from abroad, right? In terms of the tuition. So I had a whole list and I was like, this ain't going to happen. And I'm definitely not going to get a sponsorship, right? So I found BUNAC, got accepted. And then I had another friend of mine in university at Greenwich. And he had family in the States, in Atlanta. So he said, oh, yeah. He said, I've got some family. He said, I can introduce you to them. Maybe they can help you out. So I was like, all right, cool. So I'm making all the arrangements. And now it's time for me to tell my dad that I'm going to America. He doesn't know yet, by the way. So told my dad, he absolutely lost it. Absolutely. Like, he was like, what? He said, you're going to America? He said, we're in the middle of a recession, man. He said, you're not going to get a job. He said, what are you wasting your time and your money for? And he was strongly against me going to America. But I was also a degenerate at that time, so I didn't really care that he was against it. So I was like, that's your opinion, man. And my dad and I have very different philosophies in life, where my dad is very risk averse and I am the complete opposite. I'd take every risk in the world, especially if it's betting on myself, even if I fail. Like, I was like, okay. I was like, I may not get a job. Doesn't mean I'm not going to try. You know, so my mom was very upset as well. She was like, why are you going? Hers was more so like, are we that bad of parents? Like, what have we done? Like, why are you abandoning us? This, that, and the other. And I think leaving my mother behind was the worst pain that I have ever felt in my life. Mm. Right? Like, to see her so distraught about me going. And I, you know, I would tell them now, I was like, there's nothing that you guys have done. Like, because they to this day, even though I tell them it's not the case, to this day, they believe that I've moved to America because they were such bad parents, they feel guilty about how harsh they were when I was growing up. So they feel, even though I correct them, that they're the reason why I moved out. I tell them, no. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you. So you were for college, university in England is 4 years. Am I right so far?
3 years.
3 years. And you decided to make this change after spending, 2 years at university?
No. I started to explore the possibility in my second year. And then after I graduated is when
okay. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Okay. Yes. I missed that. So yes. You had graduated. Yeah, you had graduated.
I was on the verge of graduating. Yeah.
I see.
I was making the arrangements preemptively.
Okay.
I see. So you graduate with a university degree from the prestigious sounding University of Greenwich, which sounds, like I say, if you hadn't said that.
Sounds elitist.
It sounds like, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Their rankings may have improved. Who knows?
Because of you. Yeah. So, okay. So you've graduated. Then you decide to move to Miami, which is a great city.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love Miami. I'm a scuba diver. So I just,
me too. I am as well.
Next time I'm out there, we'll go out for sure.
Yeah, please.
And I'm always looking for good scuba diving buddies. So.
Yeah, I've scuba dived around the world. It's my favorite hobby.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay, well, good. So that will come up more in the thrive section. Okay. So your parents are obviously, as you've just said, very upset and disappointed, even to this day, that you're leaving the homeland of England and moving to the United States.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not going to have any Muslim influence around you as well. That was another thing. Mm. Mm. And that's the other thing is as I was growing up, even I did not have many Muslim or South Asian friends. Mm-hmm. You know, I always hung around with the other, you know, as I mentioned, like Caribbean, like it just happened organically. It's not like I was like seeking to be belonged by them. It was just like the way that my school was set up. And those are the people that I got along, you know, with. So when I left, there's no mosque, you're not going to be able to do this and that. And, you know, so that also, like, spiritually, you're going to like drift away. But spiritually, I had already drifted away while I was in England.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, you know, living my own life, as it were.
Okay.
So did I answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you. Cool. Go ahead.
So, you said Miami, by the way. It's the first time I went to Atlanta. So my friend had family in Atlanta. So anyway, I had the conversation with my dad, told him I'm going to leave regardless. And if I don't, I'll come back. Nathan threw the biggest party for me, where we had like the most legendary party ever. To this day, my friends come to me and they're like, hey, do you remember that party that we threw back then? It was like a frat American style, and I had all my friends, and it was such a great send off. I left, and then I arrived to Atlanta, and it was fantastic. I loved the aura that I was soaking in the moment I got off the plane. You know, it felt like my dream was actually coming true, which is kind of like such a surreal feeling for me. Didn't really care that I didn't have employment, you know, didn't bother me. I just loved the fact that I was there. So my friend's aunt was gracious enough to take me in for, I don't know, a week or 10 days. And she too was trying to help me find some arrangements. And she says to me, I've got a friend in West Palm Beach. She's a vice president at a bank. I think she'll be able to get you in. So let's go to Florida. I was like, all right, let's do it. So she drove me from Atlanta. Such a nice person. I'm not a relative. I'm her nephew's friend, right? To drive 12 hours, right, from Atlanta to West Palm Beach. Yeah, that says something about your character.
For sure.
You know, so she drove me and we arrived, and they are well off. I arrived to her brother's place first while I was getting situated. It was a mansion. I was like, oh my God, this is like insane. This looks like a house from like a rap video or something, right? the spiral staircase, right?
A rap video.
MTV Cribs.
Exactly. It looked like, hey, welcome to my, And it just opens up into like a palace.
I don't admit it, but I like rat. I don't admit it very
Big hair.
I was just like, oh my God, this is like fantastic. I can't believe it. I gotta tell my friends about this place, right? So I'm getting situated. I stayed there for about a week or so. And she says to me, she's got a friend who's a pilot, and he can let you stay at his place. It's a 3-bedroom apartment. A three-bedroom house, I'm sorry, that you'll have to yourself. And you got to pay $700 a month or something like that in rent. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, yeah. I was like, absolutely. That's fantastic. And we arrived, and it was a beautiful place. It was like in a retirement community. Again, I'm very open about like my race and like the stigma attached to it. But here I was, right? Brown kid, braids, in this very wealthy, affluent retirement community, right? I stuck out like a sore thumb. They would look at me like, how the hell does this brown kid live here? Like, is he a criminal? Like, what's going on? like, what is going on here? How the hell did you... Are you a rapper? Like, who are you?
Or a squatter?
Yeah. So, but nonetheless, I moved in, and I didn't have a car, obviously, couldn't afford one. You know, and that was my first wake up call, is the lack of public transportation in Florida. And everything was going rosy, right? I felt like my American dream was about to come to fruition. And then things took a very dark turn. And this is where really like the brunt of my personal trauma comes into play. This pilot stopped paying the bills. So one by one, everything started to go off. So first was the TV. Next was the internet. And then after that, then all of the electricity in the house went off. And then the cherry on top was the water went off. Stopped paying the water bill. So there was absolutely zero running water in the house. And the first time it happened, as you might imagine, I didn't really understand. I didn't even know that this was a thing, right? To not have water. Like, I was like, turn on the tap. All right, it's working. And then slowly, like, the pressure, you know, it doesn't just go off, right? There's water built up in the tank, right? So I'm noticing that it's the pressure's like loosening. And then I wake up one morning and I open it and nothing's happening, right? It's like a drop coming down. And I text the pilot, and I text my friend's aunt, like, hey, I think something's up in the house. Things are not working. Not really sure what's going on. And then the aunt said, okay, let me try get in touch with person. I also try to get in touch with the person. Don't really hear back from him. No response whatsoever. And then I walk up to the mail because he's still getting mail delivered, right? And that's when I see the overdue bills coming through with a big red stamp right on the outside, Comcast and electric and water. And I was like, this mother stopped paying the damn bills. Meanwhile, he's getting $700 in rent from me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, this is, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I'd started to feel depressed. And it's interesting. It's so unlike my character now to share personal feelings on social media. But back then, I would be very open and I would post, social media would be my outlet, right? Where I would post about, oh my God, like, this, that, and the other, and you don't know what it feels like. I don't, you know, you don't ever say that you've been in a bad position until you've been in my shoes, and these types of like posts, right? And it would be my outlet to the point where then Nathan would tell me that our friends from school would be coming up to him and asking him, hey, is Rez all right? Like, is he like, I'm seeing his like posts, a little bit out of the norm. And I really wasn't all right. And I would speak with Nathan, and my parents have zero clue. I don't even think they know to the extent of what I went through to this day, because I did not want them to be worried about me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even about embarrassment. Like, it wasn't even like remotely that. It was just, imagine knowing that your son doesn't have running water to live. You know, and it's interesting, right? Because I've listened to various episodes on your show where people have, you know, your guests have spoken about very serious things. I think the difference in my case is that my trauma was somewhat self-inflicted, right? And I say that I was homeless, but I also say that I was willingly homeless, because I could have gone back home to England at any point and packed up shop, right, and gone back to my loving home, my mom's amazing cooking, right, and all that. But I didn't want to do that. I wasn't going to fail. Like, I've never failed at anything in my life apart from in maths, you know. Like, so failure was not an option. Like, I've come way too far. Like, I'm in America, man. You know, like, I'm not going to give up. So I'll complain and mope about, I ain't going to give up. So what I would do, because I didn't have a car, is I would walk to Publix, which is the grocery store here in Florida. It was about 15, 20 minutes up the street. And I would literally carry gallons of water, like in my hand, multiple times a day, back and forth throughout the day. which I would use for everything that you use water for. Mm-hmm. And I often say to people that you don't know how important water is until you do not have it. Mm-hmm. Because most people only associate water generally with drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't think about, oh, let me brush my teeth real quick and just put a bit of water on it. Oh, I spilled something here. Let me just wipe that up, right? Or all of these different showering. Mm-hmm. And imagine, like, I would use gallons of water to, like, shower like this, mm-hmm. right? And I would walk back and forth multiple times carrying it in the, and it was June as well, ooh, by the way.
Hot.
So, yeah, it was really scorching. Right, a sweaty mess, taking like 10 showers a day. And then on top of that, as I mentioned, the internet went off as well. So I would wait for the bus to go to Barnes & Noble, which is the bookstore, right? Because they got free Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And I would literally wake up and I would wait at the bus stop, sometimes for an hour and a half, because Florida's public transportation is phenomenal. And I would literally stay in Barnes and Nobles from 10. I'd get there at 10 a.m. And I would go to the gym. There was an LA Fitness in the little plaza. Go to LA Fitness for an hour and go back to Barnes and Noble. And I would just be dishing off application after application and getting rejection after rejection because my dad was right. It's 2008. It's a recession. Who the hell is going to sponsor a British kid with crap grades, right? Like, I didn't come from an Ivy League, you know. I know University of Greenwich sounds very prestigious to you, but to the average American, like, what the hell is this? Like, you know, like, we're not going to pay for a sponsorship for this kid. Like, what's so special about him, right? So I'm getting all these rejections, and I'm not giving up. Right. And I started to get a glimmer of hope when I got an interview with Mazda and Mazda, the car dealership. Mm-hmm. And it was just for a sales role. And I told the guy my situation. And I said, hey, man, I was like, I'm not a US citizen or green card holder or anything. I was like, is that going to be a problem? And he said, no. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I have like a potential in now. I just have to impress them, right? So I go through all the interviews. Mazda was 45 minutes away from my house. At this moment in time, my money is running very scarce, right? Because I'm still paying this guy for rent, right? Despite not having it, because I, in my mind, I didn't feel right not paying it, you know, for whatever reason. Although I did stop, but when I stopped, it was towards the very tail end where I had enough, but I was still paying him. So I would walk 45 minutes in the, I think it's probably like August now. It's even hotter.
Wow.
In the heat, and my suit would be absolutely drenched. I would have to like button it up so that they couldn't see like anything. And I went through all the interviews. And everybody, and the way that it worked is like you'd have the interview, and then afterwards they would basically, you, everybody would go in one by one into the main manager's office and walk out with a job offer. Everybody's going in around me and I'm waiting, and my name never gets called, and nobody even tells me anything like, you didn't get it, you did get it. After waiting for quite some time and like asking, hey, do you know what's going on? Nobody really had anything. Everybody's pretty much left now. I've just decided to walk back home. And then I got in touch with the guy that originally said that they would sponsor me. And he said, yeah, he said they changed their mind. He said, they're not going to sponsor you. And I was like, man, it was like that. This was like my only hope, really, right? So that went out of the window. So I continued to crack on at that moment in time. Nathan actually came to visit me, and we had a great time for that 1 week while he was here. I felt fantastic. Like, yeah, it was like I was home again. Like, you know, he hung out with me. We went to Miami. We had a great time, you know. And then obviously when it was time for him to leave, all of like the pressure like started to like pile back. And he said, man, he said, you're going to be all right, man. He said, don't worry. You're going to be all right. There would be a girl that would braid my hair at the time. And I had been seeing her for quite some time, a friend, to be clear as well. After 4 months or so, she came to know about my situation because I had just told her, like, hey, I said, I'm going through some stuff. This is what's happening. And in the last couple months, she took me into her house when she found out the conditions that I was living in. And I am still forever indebted to her and her sister. The names are Yaya and Jess. And I will never, ever forget what they have done for me. Like, you know, because if it was not for them, like I would have been continuing to live through very terrible circumstances. And now, once I moved in with Yaya, I stopped paying the rent to this other guy. And then I spoke with the aunt, or the aunt said, yeah, I noticed that you've stopped paying the rent. I said, yeah. So he ain't paying his bills. So what am I going to pay him rent for? I said, I'm moving somewhere else. And they weren't particularly happy. And I said, look, I said, how would you feel? I said, if your son was living in a place with no running water to bathe, to wash, no electricity, no nothing, I said, how would you feel? You know, she kind of got the hint, right, and understood. So now, thankfully, I at least had a roof over my head and managed to find another job. And the other job was a terrible job. It was terrible, but he agreed to sponsor me. It was inside. So the guys that come up to they physically come up to the inside the shops and they sell stationery. You know what I mean? So you'd go in and be like, hey, so would you like some paper and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, this is such a crap job, man. I said, my dad's going to be so pissed when he finds out that I'm doing this crap. But I was like, hey, man, I was like, he said that he's going to sponsor me, right? So I went through the interview, I went through the probationary period and everything. And everything went pretty smoothly. And we got to the end. And he said, look, man, he said, we'll sponsor you. He said, but you got to pay for it. It's $8,000. Oh, and wow. I was like,
isn't that kind of illegal?
It's a scam.
Yeah, it is illegal. Yeah, it is illegal. Yeah.
And this is still in Miami?
This is in West Palm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, West Palm Beach.
Yeah, West Palm Beach. That's where I was staying at the time. Okay. At this moment, I haven't yet moved to Miami. Okay. So I don't have any money left now. So I have no choice but to call my dad. And I call up my dad. And I'm like, Dad, I was like, I've got this job. I said, they're willing to sponsor me. I was like, I just need you to give me the money, man. I said, I'll pay you back, I promise. He's like, what's the job? And I tried to like evade the question. I was like, yeah, I was like, it's a decent job, man. I said, it's sales. I said, you know, I get paid. And I said, you know, but I said, I'll give you money back. I said, I just need the money. He said, but what's the job? I said, I got to go into businesses that sell stationery. And he was like, what? He was like, you're going to do what? So you're going to still sell stationery inside a business. And he said, that's shit. So what are you going to do that for? Like, he said, no, no, no. He's like, I was like, Dad, come on, man, please, please, please. I've never begged for anything in my life. I begged my dad to give me the money. And my dad was like, sorry, son. He's like, it ain't happening. He said, you can come home here and get a better job in London. Mm. And And that was it. And I was like, fuck. I was sorry.
Okay.
And as if I haven't sworn enough, I don't say sorry.
You're
good, man. Yeah. You're good.
So the conversation ends. Yaya's there sitting with Jess and her Jess's husband, Jimmy. They are from Aruba. What happened? Like they're all really excited, like hoping that I have some good news because we're very close now. They're like really hoping. They know what I've gone through. You know, they're like, yeah, yeah. Did you get it? And then I'm like, nah, guys, I didn't get it. My dad didn't give me the money. And for a moment, I hated my dad. I was like, this guy, man, like this freaking guy would not give me the damn money. Like, you know, I resented my dad for not giving me the money.
Yeah.
And I got emotional, obviously, you know, I think I cried for the first time in front of people. I'm not much of a crier, quite honestly. There's only a few things that like set me off, like my friend Kieran's death and my granddad's death. And this was one situation because I was like, I'm going back home, man. Like the thought of going back home and coming back with my tail between my legs was the worst feeling imaginable. I think in addition to that also was the social stigma that was attached to it. Because remember, I'd thrown this epic party right before I left, and now I'm coming back. In addition to that, one of the things that I didn't mention is I actually missed my graduation because I got my grades, but I didn't attend my graduation because it was happening while I was in America. So I've made like a decent number of sacrifices. So at this moment in time, you know, I said bye to them all. I packed up my things and then I came home, and I called up Nathan and I was like, I won't forget it. I called up Nathan. I was like, Nathan, man, I was like, I failed, man. It was like for the first time in my life, I was like, I failed at something. I said, I don't know how it happened, man. I gave it my best shot, man. I said, it just didn't happen. He's like, and then Nathan was like, nah, man. He's like, you didn't fail, man. You know, always the picker-upper type of guy, right? You didn't fail, man. He's like, you know, you went through all that, man. He's like, you did everything and you did everything that you could, just didn't work out. But in my mind, and even to some degree to this day, it's black and white for me. Either you fail or you don't fail, right? There's no, you tried, you gave your best effort, right? There's none of that for me. In my mind, I had failed. I came back and I was on the plane and I was coming back home feeling very disappointed. And that was the end of my American dream, or so it seemed at the time.
Wow.
So that's kind of your low point.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the lowest point ever in my entire life.
I get it. Yeah. And even though you got, you know, this house with no running water, it's kind of like air.
Yeah.
You appreciate air till you're scuba diving. And then this has happened to me, really. And you go to inhale and you realize through the excitement of what you're seeing, you've run out of air.
It's happened to me as well.
Yeah.
It's the worst feeling ever.
It's not a good feeling.
It's the worst feeling ever.
You take air for granted until that moment.
Yeah.
Or water in your situation.
Yeah. You know,
what I'm getting from all of this, I think your upbringing has made you really hardy, you know, because it's, I mean, your upbringing, your home was great, but your neighborhood was kind of sketchy. So it's kind of like you needed to grow up real fast.
Yeah.
You know, you were faced with adversity really young. And maybe perhaps if you didn't go through that, who knows, you probably would not have like survived that long without electricity, without water and all of that. Or find or be creative on how to, you know, where to find the internet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mom, actually, when I was growing up, I don't know if she still thinks this, but she would literally say, your heart is made out of stone when I was growing up. because when my dad would rip me to shreds every single night, I wouldn't even flinch. Literally just like sit there like this. Literally sit there. I remember my dad would sit in his little sofa, like, you know, like Everybody Loves Raymond, the dad.
Yeah.
my dad would sit there. I would sit on the corner of the sofa. My mom would be on the other side. And I'd literally sit like this, staring at the floor. And my dad would get so annoyed because I would never look at him in the eyes. Get so annoyed when I wouldn't do that. I mastered the art of just zoning out when my dad would like rip me to shreds. Mm-hmm. And my mom would often say, she said, you're a stone heart. She's like, nothing really affects you or phases you. And I think it's because my dad was kind of like so rough with me, as you said, Tanya, growing up, you know, like I just kind of thought, you know, I just got to get on with it.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's no time for remorse. There's no time for pity. You know, what's that going to achieve for my goals?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the key word I'm hearing is tenacity.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some real tenacity. I want to go back to that stone cold staring at the floor thing in the next episode, but let's pause here because this is kind of like what led you up to this, you know, basically being homeless with no running water.
Yeah.
Just, you know, trying to survive and being scammed, you know, this is not a good place,
but then being kind of forced to go back home.
Yeah. And I'm not going to give away the ending, but you know, I'm not going to do a spoiler alert, but the story does get better, but we're going to enjoy watching that journey.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Listen, Reza, this is fascinating. Mm-hmm. I've been riveted to, not just your story, but your cool accent.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
So listen, we'll come right back on the survive story of Reza and what happens next here on Post Traumatic Thriving, where we talk about the dive, the survive, and the thrive.
The choice is yours.
Thanks for supporting our podcast. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe, and follow us on your favorite social media. For books, merchandise, or to donate, visit coreiq.com. Post Traumatic Thriving is produced by CoreIQ, a nonprofit with a mission to teach the life skills we all need but are not taught in school. CoreIQ and the Post Traumatic Thriving podcast are for informational purposes only and do not provide medical or mental health advice. Always consult with your licensed medical and mental health care providers.